10 minutes here before the top of the hour. We had the wrap-up of the Communist Party Congress over the weekend, and so much to talk about as regards that. Joining us in our studios is Rebecca Chung-Wilkins, Bloomberg's government and politics correspondent. So, Rebecca, a lot of cross-currents here. So you have some really top economic officials, the PBOC governor, Yi Gang, as well as other economic leaders completely exiting the party leadership. And instead, they're replaced by really people more in the security area. I suppose you can say science and technology, also a big part of that. And so that would suggest almost a de-emphasis on the economy. However, if President Xi wants to achieve certain goals, he's going to have to stimulate a lot in the next year. And that suggests that maybe the economy will get juiced up. So I know you've been looking at this very closely, and you probably note a million other interesting aspects to this.
Absolutely. We did see quite a big sort of shifting of the guard. To some extent, that was expected. But we did see that Xi Jinping's goals that he outlined, this emphasis on security, science, education, did show through in the selection of the broader leadership, so to speak. And we have seen exits from these sort of key finance positions. And it's accompanied, I think, more broadly by this move away from placing technocrats, particularly in that top leadership body, the Politburo and the Politburo Standing Committee, with more of Xi's close allies.
Yeah. What does it mean really for China going forward in its relations with the rest of the world, though? Because its emergence on the world stage, its increase in prosperity, can you really decouple that from China opening to the world? And is it going back into its shell? Are we seeing some evidence of that?
Well, I think certainly China and Xi Jinping in his speeches have tried to project an image of the country that is, in a way, willing to take its rightful place on the global stage and challenge the US hegemony. So it's, I think, less signs that we see China retreating, but more that it's ready to take a stride and quite a different and possibly antagonistic role in the world. I think that, coupled with the fact that, for example, you now have a standing committee, these are the top leadership positions in China, really full of Xi Jinping's close allies, there is increasing likelihood that there is likely to be less diversity of views, less discussion, less pushback. These are really sort of the men who are there to enforce Xi Jinping's and implement Xi Jinping's own agenda.
The flip side of the argument, I suppose, would be it makes it easier now for Xi Jinping to introduce and to implement some new policies. And that could be a positive as long as it's sort of benign leadership that we see.
Yes, to some extent, I think that's true. And Xi Jinping is taking a firmer hand on the country, just as, of course, he's about to steer it through the first economic downturn since he took that top position. And in some ways, we did see him preparing for this sort of tighter period, you know, encouraging the spirit of frugality and so on. And we didn't see, which we saw in 2017, this emphasis on the party's core mission of making people's lives better and making people sort of seek happiness, which is what we saw 5 years ago. So there does seem to be a sort of nod to the fact that there is going to be a tougher period ahead. Saying that, you know, we also have seen, as you say, figures like Liu He exiting, these figures that typically have been the ones that have sort of given markets some confidence that there is a steady hand looking after the economy at the very, very highest echelons. And that may be, you know, a little bit of an uncertain or worrying factor for some investors.
Of course, the property crisis has impacted a lot of China's middle class. What can be done to address that? Are we expecting any major policy shifts?
Absolutely. I think that is a really central point here, and it speaks to this idea of the China dream. I mean, Xi Jinping in 2012 laid out this vision to restore and provide prosperity and wealth for people, and that no longer looks to be the promise, especially when it comes to property. I mean, I think the reality is, and we've had lots of excellent experts on here saying that there just isn't very much that the government can do. This is really now in the hands of local governments who will be expected expected to manage the fallout of this. And you can see this reflected in stimulus measures. You know, we've seen some loosening and some amount of funds available at the central level, but predominantly this has been about at local government levels, sort of loosening up policies around home buying. And also, clearly, they have been given the responsibility of making sure those defaulted developers who've stopped construction, that they, local governments, were the one that have to kind of get that ball moving again to try and prevent more of those protests that we've seen over mortgage payments for undelivered homes.
We often try to simplify things, particularly on the radio, to make it easier for people to understand. I want to make a statement and give you a true or false on it, and then you can provide the nuance to it. More common prosperity likely means more socialist policy, communist policy, and less capitalism. True or false?
I'm going to opt for false.
Okay.
But not because I think there's going to be less of the socialist motivation and ideology. We have clearly increasingly seeing that governing policy. But I think when it comes to common prosperity in particular, there has been somewhat of a misunderstanding of what pragmatically this really looks like. It's important that we remember common prosperity was about the crackdown on the tech sector, the crackdown on the real estate sector. It has not actually done that much other than tinker around the edges at redistributing wealth for the bulk of sort of middle class people. And in fact, when you look at the property sector,
doesn't it stunt the animal spirits of particularly of people trying to develop startup companies?
I think that's certainly true. It has certainly targeted the private sector, and to that extent, I think that, you know, socialist ideology, if you want to put it that way, will increasingly mean that the private sector, including those that you mentioned, will suffer. And we have seen sort of the rise of state companies, and many investors also expecting there to be more state companies dominating. One analyst sort of referred to this as the age of rust, which I thought was a great expression for that. It really points to just how difficult it is to create that kind of innovation that Xi Jinping is trying to go for when you don't have a very thriving, you know, animal spirits driven private market, as you say.
Just very quickly, we also saw Hu Jintao being unceremoniously escorted out of the arena. Very highly stage managed event, this. Are we making too much of his exit?
I mean, honestly, this is one of those things that who is to say? I mean, I think it is a reflection of just, you know, China and Xi Jinping standing in the world, that this single event has invoked so much criticism and so much speculation.
Yeah, it may just be that he's quite elderly now, and did appear to be perhaps a little ill, and they even said he was coming back. Anyway, no more time on the subject at the moment, but thanks so much, Rebecca, for joining us. Rebecca Chung-Wilkins, Bloomberg News.